for the next update.
Fresh FM 2025 PMR Gold Award winner for Best Local Radio Station for General Entertainment and Music, as well as News and Current Affairs.
The Gold Standard of Radio.
I love it. I love it. 7:34, that's your time. The NSK is riding solo this morning. Thank you so much for choosing us, making a conscious decision to say, look, today we want to be with Fresh FM. It's 25 days into the month of April. Thank you once again. Now, yesterday, the president had a State of the Nation address, and there's a lot of talk. There's a lot of buzz about what was announced. There's a lot of buzz about her plans and her administration's plans. But we will contextualize it right now. We'll debate about it somewhere right now. And to help me just contextualize, what was said and what the plans are, is a political analyst, an author, a researcher, consultant, OC Raquel Andreas. So, Moro Raquel, how are you this morning?
I'm good, NSK. How are you doing?
It's a Friday, and it's weekend time. Plus, yesterday, there was good news shared by our commander-in-chief. Let's get into it, Osire Kyle. Let's get into it, right? Now, 7 priority areas for her administration. Agriculture, sports, youth empowerment, quality education and training, creative industries, quality health and social welfare, land, housing, and sanitation. That's what she said. That's her 7 priority areas for administration for the next 5 years. Now, I'm curious to find out, how different are these priority areas compared to previous administrations, previous presidents? Also, the previous presidents were famously known for having names for their plans, the Harambe Prosperity Plan and President Pohamba with his mass housing plan. What is hers?
Okay, so, delivering a State of Nation address, a maiden one at that, is no easy task. Let's just start there. She doesn't have the luxury of having done it before. And so there was a lot to take on, I will have to say. And I actually like how she structured her delivery, starting from recapping on what the previous administration has attained, because the whole purpose of a State of Nation is to tell you what is the state of our country.
Yes.
And not just that, where are we then headed? What are we looking at? What are you promising us? A budget was passed. How is this money actually going to be used? That's really sort of why she was doing what she did in terms of unpacking what is a SONA. Now, coming to what is her, her administration's administration's focus called, referring it to how, the previous administration had the Harambe Prosperity Plan. When you really unpack what you were saying, you realize that it's the SWAPO Manifesto Implementation Plan that she was talking about. And so the SWAPO Manifesto Implementation Plan is abbreviated as SMIP. So that's basically what her administration is focusing on. They're rolling out the SWAPO Manifesto Implementation Plan.
AKA SMIP. Okay.
SMIP or SMIP. I don't know how they pronounce it, but SMIP, that's the abbreviation in the plan. So these are the 7 priority areas that were identified through the SWAPO Party Manifesto, and now it's being rolled out through the implementation plan of the party. And, she openly says it, that she has given directive that, the aspirations of SMIP should also be incorporated into the National Development Plan 6, as well as it's the basis for the performance agreements for her ministers, for her cabinet. So this is the Harambe Prosperity Plan had pillars. The SMIP is having priority areas. But when you really look at, the priority areas, you contrast them to the pillars, you realize that it's more or less the same themes. Harambe Prosperity Plan looked at international relations as a pillar, social progression. And under social progression, you find issues around health and social welfare, bits about education as well. Youth was also under that particular one. There's also economic empowerment. You'd also find elements of youth empowerment. And then there was also, what was the other one? Harambee had five. IR, social progression, economic empowerment, infrastructure development. Across the different seven priority areas that she identified, there is elements of infrastructure development. Agriculture is going to need that. Sports is going to need that. Land and housing. Most of the priority areas are going to need infrastructure development. But with Harambee, it has a standalone pillar. Mm. Basically to say that the themes are the same because it's still Namibia. The problems are still the same. But in terms of, you know, unpacking them, I think she went a little a step further by just sort of pulling out very specific focal areas. And then on top of that, she identified economic enablers that will now operationalize these priority areas.
Yeah. Now, Raquel, all good and well, but, you know, we have to land at the land question. That is a big problem for us as Namibians. Now, the president has directed the Rural and Urban Development Ministry to establish a special land delivery task force to fast-track land creation and housing opportunities within its existing laws. Please contextualize how these task force teams operate and their historical effectiveness. Is it professionals that are already employed by the ministry, or do they hire consultants? How are they even appointed, and how different are they from the existing mandate and the staff of the ministry?
A task force is basically almost it's functioning in an advisory capacity to advise the president and the relevant ministry that's responsible. So in the past, we've had economic task force, we've had task force on very topical issues, even technology, for example, the fourth industrial revolution had a task force, gender-based violence at some point required a task force. So the whole purpose of a task force is really to expedite research into a particular issue to appropriately advise the responsible ministry, as well as also advise the Office of the President on how to go about it. So we are anticipating experts, technocrats, to make up the composition of this task force, of course, complementing the capacities that are already at ministerial level. So they don't necessarily have a higher mandate per se, because they function in advisory capacity. And in the past, most of the task force have delivered on their mandates, because they really just go a step further with researching and really offering expert advice. And sometimes they might even look at consultants. So it depends on the needs at the ministry in question. I wouldn't look at them with a side eye, because they're quite useful in the sense that they can really help streamline issues and give a more researched focus in the particular issue at hand. Yeah. Mm.
Does the president's explanation on how the government will fund free tertiary make sense?
Ooh, it's so fascinating how, you know, her speech is about 30 plus pages, but that was the one thing that everybody is blowing up.
Yes, definitely. I mean, we would all like to study, but yo, those fees.
Yeah, no, I understand. You see, with free education, there has been calls over the years from especially student activists. They've really been vocal on this particular issue. I don't want to attribute it to a particular political party, but I would say the young people themselves have been, you know, at the forefront of calling for free education. And so now, you know, some of the memories from young people, interestingly, is around, you know, okay, what happens to NASFA funding? Are we no longer getting refunds?
Yeah.
What's the story now? But at the same time, I also want to say that, you know, look, again, I want to draw us back to the fact that, you know, the priority area on quality education and training, as it's reflecting in the SWAPA implementation plan, was informed by their manifesto. In as much as there was a lot of hoo-ha at the time around it being a shared GDP manifesto, the reality of the matter is they have technocrats within SWAPO. They have the expertise needed. And when you really take time to study the plan and, I mean, the manifesto and the implementation plan, you actually see there's a bit of sophistication attached to the thinking and planning around it. So I'm making this point to say that you know, saying the fees are going to fall is not something that was succumbed because it's now SONA.
Hmm.
It's something that was mentioned during campaign season. It's something that was mentioned when she took office, when she, you know, gave mandate to her ministers, appointed her cabinet. And I want to believe, I think putting on my policy analyst hat, I want to believe that this is a well-researched intervention based off of best practices, all right? Which means that they have taken the time to look at how this is being done in countries where education, tertiary education is free. Like I, for example, studied in Germany under that, you know, free tuition, free situation with the German government scholarship. So there are certain modalities that were in place that allows the students to still get government funding for their accommodation and the likes. Of course, she said that, you know, parents will have to bear the burden on accommodation, transport, and the likes of the students. But I don't want to just jump the gun and say, oh, that means NASFAF is completely scraped out. We still have the situation of private institutions. What then happens to the Namibian child that can't get placement at UNAM or NAS or at the VTC, but there's the IUMs and the Vuvichas and Triumphers and ICARES. You know, can NASFAF still fund me, for example?
Yeah.
Now, there's going to have to be a hybrid situation happening where if it's a public institution, yeah, it's free. But then if it's a private institution, you still have access to government funding for your study. So it's free to a large extent, but it's not 100% free, I would like to put it, when it comes to private institutions. So now in terms of how this free education is going to be funded, I'd like us to focus on the economic enablers that you mentioned. When we talk about economic enablers, we basically say these are the potential pots of gold that we're going to look at. We're looking at mining sector, energy, oil and gas, tourism, agriculture, water, fisheries, transport and logistics. The students themselves, the youth activists themselves will tell you that when they were calling for free education, they wanted, you know, fishing quotas to be leveraged.
Mm.
Because with fishing quotas, you know, we've got the ocean, our fish continues to replenish itself. It's quite sustainable, you know. So in that having fishing quotas allocated towards funding free education, in my opinion, is one of the low-hanging fruits. And then from the mining sector, we saw that the president had gone, for example, to Rossing for a, in what I phrase as a domestic resource mobilization drive.
Mm.
To in as much as, you know, the Namibian government doesn't have shares in Rossing, the point of the matter is still resources from our ground, from our land. And so with that, for example, there's a lot of talk around local content and beneficiation of our minerals. So mining, getting, as much back from some of these companies that are operating in Namibia, to give back, you know, companies can set up education funds and channel that money into free education, for example. You know, energy, the oil and gas sector, for example, it's budding and it looks promising. Investors are coming in and pouring in money. From an ESG, environmental, social and governance perspective, I think a strong local content grip is very important. So I want to say that funding of free education is possible, and the actual putting into practice of having free education in Namibia, tertiary education, is also possible because there are best practices. Other countries with bigger populations have done it before. There was a concern around, no, you know, universities are going to be overwhelmed. You know, lecturers can't handle the current capacities. How are they going to? You know, you have, like, for example, at German universities, you have two semesters, you know, the fall and the winter semester, where both of them students can register. So they could register on that rotational basis to better facilitate, you know, the existing infrastructure. So I am personally quite optimistic about this move because there are best practices. Other countries with higher populations are doing it. And at the same time, also, we've got, you know, what she phrases as enablers. We've got low-hanging fruits that we could tap into to channel some of that money in that direction.
All right. I also want to highlight the official opposition and opposition in general. As we wrap up our conversation this morning, how would you rate the performance of the leader of the official opposition at his maiden SONA, Abudi Imbs? Also, rate the rest of the opposition leaders. Did they do enough to ask pertinent questions in an effort to hold the president and the governing party accountable?
You see, Honorable Eames is in a very interesting position, I want to say. You know, being leader of official opposition and not being the leader of the party, which means he gets his marching orders from the leader of the party. So it's very difficult to rate him in a particular manner when I am having the, you know, opinion that, you know, those are not necessarily his own thoughts, 100%, I would want to put it, you know, he's parroting what is being communicated from the leadership that is not in the house. So it's very tricky. Or it could have been, but at the same time, I think I'm a little bit biased just on the basis of the fact that he's not the leader of the party. You know, if this was the previous, you know, parliament, for example, and Honorable Venani had spoken up, I would know that, you know, this is a seasoned politician and he's been in the house for so long. I would confidently be able to rate him and say, oh, he fell off the mark here. But with the new leader of opposition, I'm a bit hesitant to rate him. But I mean, the question was clear, and I think he, the president humored him in engaging his question first in her response. But then what I want to mention is the questions that came from the leader of AR, Professor Mpanda, Honorable Swartboy, for example, Honorable Venani. I liked the maturity of the questions, in acknowledging the good that the president brought to the house through her maiden sauna speech, but I also liked how they were very critical. I think Honorable Swartboy was very, you know, spot on when he unpacked some of the economic enablers, you know, some of the bottlenecks around economic enablers. I thought that was a very good contribution where he really said it's well and good to highlight, you know, how we're going to you know, unpack how we're going to leverage agriculture, for example. But then we've got, you know, our laws and our some entities like the agribanks that are functioning as bottlenecks and how, you know, they're being counterproductive. That was very useful. That was a very, very good intervention. And then, you know, Honorable Venani coming in to also compliment. Because one thing I have to say, NSK, is the maiden speech, the maiden sauna speech of Her Excellency was by far, in my opinion, I've been comparing saunas over the years, by far the best well-put sauna, in my opinion.
Wow. That's a big statement, Raquel.
Yes. No, really. One, it was, she really owned the room, NSK. She owned the room. Her delivery was spot on. And what I like about it is the fact that, you know, a lot of people tend to say, oh, when the new administration comes in, they don't even want to mention about what's happening, what had happened with the previous administration. She took quite a lot of time unpacking the accomplishments under the previous administration, which is the, you know, the Harambe legacy, if I can put it like that. Mm. And then kind of building this momentum to say, and this is how we're going to complement this legacy by focusing on the 7 priority areas and through these economic enablers. In terms of opposition's performance, I found the sauna session quite refreshing, quite engaging. And at the end of the day, the president made a call where she said she's calling on all of government. The government of Namibia is comprising of the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary. All of government needs to work together to realize the SNP, the ambitions of SNP. And so, in as much as, yes, we are, the parliament, specifically National Assembly and the National Council, is comprising of opposition parties, they are also government. And I think it's the first time we really clearly hear that from a president. And it's not just the SWAPO party government. It's all of government, including members of opposition, to really rally behind her vision and realize it. And most of the opposition members that spoke were acknowledging that they really hope for her success and where they can apply themselves, they want to help. And I also like that she highlighted that the parliament as a legislative entity needs to help her with efficient and effective passing of laws, because a lot of the interventions that her priority areas, they are relying on the amendment of certain legal infrastructure and the passing of certain certain legal, certain laws as well. So Parliament should not function as a bottleneck, because a lot of what needs to be done is actually relying on the appropriate legal infrastructure.
Political analyst, author, and research consultant, Osi Raquel Andreas, thank you so much. Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. But you know what? Well deserved, isn't it? Well deserved. Thank you so much, Raquel. You made some pertinent points and some big statements. We will talk all day and debate all day, but let's leave it at that. Have a fantastic weekend, and we'll chip in once again next week when we see something big is happening.
Thank you, NSK. You too. Bye.
All right. Cheers.